everybody. Welcome back to the N-Express Nintendo Podcast. I am your, I guess, temporary interim host, Patrick Murphy, standing in for Tim Mason, who is at home taking care of his brand new Nintendo-loving child. And he'll probably be gone for at least a good month, maybe a little bit more. So in the meantime, you're going to have to put up with me. But, as always, we do still have standby Ricky D.
What's up, Tim Mason? What's up, Nintendo Nation?
Yeah, my name doesn't really rhyme with anything. Murphy doesn't have anything.
Technically, I'm still saying hi to Tim because I'm sure he's listening to the podcast. So congratulations to Tim. Him and his wife just had a baby, so he will be taking some time off, as you said. But I am still here and kind of super hyped. So we're going to talk about a big game.
Yeah, we got a pretty good show. Some good stuff to talk about today. And joining us for that is one of our Smash experts, Isaac Barnett.
Good to be here.
Returning. And also returning, because I believe we've had this guy on the show before. Correct me if I'm wrong, but Randy Dankovich.
I'm going to say I was. I don't know, but let's go with it. Yeah,
no,
I'm coming back.
No, no, no.
Has he never been on?
You have been on our movie podcast. You've never been on a Nintendo podcast, which means.
Do I get a prize?
No, you get to answer five questions. Five random questions
that will be the
first time whenever they appear on the show for the very first time.
Hit me.
Oh, you're ready. Okay. So Randy, first time guest, we're going to ask you five random questions to ease you into the conversation. So my first question for you is, what is your favorite video game console of all time?
That's one to put me on the spot immediately. Wow. Let's go with the original Nintendo, but specifically the one that came packed with Super Mario Bros. 3. That's the winner.
Wow. Okay. An original NES. How old are you, Randy?
I know, right?
Older than you could know.
Randy, you are the TV editor over at Goombastomp.com. So what is your favorite TV show of 2018?
My favorite TV show of 2018 is Big Mouth on Netflix.
Now, Randy, if they were ever to make a TV show based on a Nintendo property, be it live action, animated, it could be a silent film, it could be a black screen for all I care, what IP would you want them to adapt?
Kirby, because I want to see how you film somebody eating someone, shitting them out, and becoming them at the same time.
Okay.
Gotta be live action.
Yes.
Question number four. What is your favorite video game of 2018?
It's like a deadlock right now between Dead Cells and Smash, and I've been thinking about it for the last few days, and I haven't made a decision yet.
Okay. And my last question, I believe three of the four of us are huge fans of basketball, specifically the NBA. I want to know, Randy, in your opinion, who do you think is going to win the championship this year?
Well, there's the boring answer, which is the Warriors, and then there's the let's be fun answer, which put me on the spot. I would say the Raptors, who are definitely going to not make the finals because they're the Toronto Raptors, but I'm going to say they win the title this year because, goddammit, they're due for something good over there.
They are due for something. Man, they've had a rough few years lately. So I know they definitely have a good shot this year. East, you know, it's better it's been in the past few years, but I think they still have that good ticket to the finals. But,
Kyle Lowry is able to stand up straight anytime in the near future, they're in good shape.
That's right.
Yeah, you guys know where I stand. We the North. That's right. I'm Canadian. I love my Toronto Raptors. I actually placed a bet. I placed a bet before the season started that it would be Houston and Boston Celtics because 20 years ago it was Houston and Boston in the finals. And
not looking too hot right now.
Well, no, but Houston did have an amazing record. I think they had the best record in the league last year, and Boston Celtics went really far, but they're not doing too good. But anyways, enough about basketball. This is a Nintendo video game podcast, and I believe Patrick's about to transition us into today's schedule.
Segway.
I am. All right, well, first off, we're going to at least talk about what games we've been playing lately, because, Rick, I know that you have a specific game that you wanted to talk about. But after that, we've got a Smash review to do. We have to. And we've all played it. Some of us don't own it anymore, but we've all played it. And then after that, we're going to discuss maybe some good gifts for gamers this 2018 holiday season. We've all made some picks on that, and there's an article on the site as well that you can go to see some of those. But first up, yeah, let's talk about Rick. I know you've been wanting to talk about this game for a couple of podcasts now.
Yeah, so I got a copy of the game Mark of the Ninja. This is the remastered version.
Yeah,
it got released on all consoles, including the Nintendo Switch. I think the Nintendo Switch has the best version, if only because, yes, you can play it on the go. This game, guys, is amazing. It is one of my favorite games of 2018, if you count it, because technically it's a remaster. The original game came out, what, like 7 years ago, I think?
You want to hear how old I am? I bought that game on Xbox Live.
That's right.
In the Xbox Live Arcade when that existed.
Yeah, so it's funny because there's actually two amazing games that got released this year about ninjas. There was The Messenger, which was released, when was it, like in the summertime, which, by the way, was from a Canadian studio here in Montreal, Quebec, Sabotage Studios. And now we got the remastered version of Mark of the Ninja, which also comes from a Canadian developer. So there's just something about Canadians and making these ninja games that they seem to do a really, really good job. But this is one of the best stealth games I've ever played. Like, I would go so far as to say it's one of the best stealth games ever made. It looks gorgeous. It's got beautiful cinematics. The actual visuals itself of the gameplay is gorgeous. It's got an amazing soundtrack. Basically, you play as this nameless ninja. And it's like, imagine Ninja Gaiden, but with way better graphics and a real hardcore focus on stealth as opposed to, say, like platforming. You know, it is like a side-scrolling 2D action platformer, but it just delivers these twists and turns and sort of like turns the whole genre upside down. And it's weird because there's so many games released per year that feature a ninja as the main protagonist, or at least an antagonist. And this is by far one of the best. And there's been some good ones. Like, I mentioned Ninja Gaiden. There was, like, the original Shinobi game for, you know, at least for the time when it came out back in the day. Even the Ninja Gaiden that was released on, like, what was it, the Wii? Like, that game was actually pretty damn good. But this, I think, is by far the best of the best. And what I love about this game is they do this really interesting thing with sound. Like, sound plays a big part in the game because you're a ninja, so you're supposed to be quiet. You're supposed to take down the enemies, and it's all about stealth, right? And so if you, say, accidentally break a light or, I don't know, open up a door or something, the enemies will hear you, and so they'll, of course, come and investigate. And it's really interesting how smart and intelligent the actual AI is. Like, they will react to the noises around them. So you got to be really, like, sneaky and quiet in order to sneak up on them and take them out. And there's so many things to do in this game. Like, this is one of those games that you can play over and over because there's so many things to unlock, like special abilities. The levels themselves, like, you don't have to play it in the same specific order each and every single time. Like, there's various ways, like multiple ways from getting from like point A to point B. And so, like, you can play a level for the second time and get to your destination by taking a completely different route. The ninja himself, he's got, of course, like a variety of weapons. Like, you can throw bamboo darts, flares, smoke bombs, firecrackers, poison tip darts. There's just, like, so much to do. There's, like, specific costumes that you can unlock that will give you specific abilities. So if you take down, say, enough enemies by sneaking up behind them, you will increase your – I don't know what the word is, but you increase your chances of being able to sneak up behind more enemies. Like, what is the word I'm looking for? Like,
deadliness?
I guess, but like, basically, like –
blooded killerness?
Yeah. So basically, if you sneak up on enough enemies, you'll unlock a costume that improves your ninja's ability to startle your foes, take them by surprise, etc.
The Saltitude.
There you go.
Is there a costume that turns you into Michael Dudikoff in American Ninja? That's what I want to know.
No. But each of the levels is beautifully designed. It's filled with various traps, hidden secrets. You're just going to want to actually explore the levels. Like, you know, you have to destroy security systems, avoid the guard dogs, scale to rooftops, survive like poisonous gas attacks. There's this giant castle that you have to scale. It is honestly like an amazing, amazing game. And I'm assuming it's an indie game, like from an indie developer. Like, I don't know if the remastered, if they had any help in remastering this game and getting it out again, like 7 years later. But it features tight controls, strong art direction, improved graphics, enhanced audio, a ton of bonus content. Like the remastered edition actually has this amazing feature where you can turn on a commentary mode. Like, you ever watch a DVD and you watch like a commentary of a DVD? Like, have you ever seen that in a video game before?
No. That actually sounds really cool.
That's really cool. Yeah,
yeah, like you that. Have the option to enable developer commentary. It is sick. It is so good.
Let me ask you this. If you're like, I'm not a huge fan of stealth gameplay. You know, I'm not a Metal Gear Solid kind of guy or anything like that. Is this an... Sometimes stealth works for me, though. It all depends. Like, there was a game called Stealth Inc. that I really liked a lot. That was sort of a puzzle stealth game, platforming game. What does this do you think that the gameplay here would work for somebody who's maybe not a fan of traditional stealth?
Well, yeah, because it, like, I think you would like it because it is like essentially like a platformer, like a 2D side-scrolling platformer. It just puts a focus on stealth. It doesn't mean it forces you to use stealth. It's the coolest way to play the video game. It's what you're going to want to do. But like, you can straight up just attack like the guards. But there will be some times where you're going to be required to use stealth because there'll be too many guards and you just won't successfully be able to like kill all of them in like one shot, right?
Sure.
But it's still like, you know, technically like a platformer. So it's like, imagine Ninja Gaiden with like way better graphics. The controls are just amazing. And instead of Ryu having like maybe two weapons, you have like, I don't know, like 10 different weapons that you can use. Plus you pick up new abilities and new weapons as you play the game. It has these beautiful cinematic cutscenes in between the game, which, by the way, what I really like about the cinematic cutscenes, because if you remember Ninja Gaiden back in the day when it got released on the NES, one of the things that was so groundbreaking about that game was the cinematic cutscenes, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't remember having played a game prior to Ninja Gaiden, except for maybe Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, where you had these cinematic cutscenes in between the levels. And this game has it too, but it's not like overwhelming and it's not long. So like, you know, sometimes like I don't want to sit through like, say, like a 30-minute cutscene. Like, I'm looking at you, Xenoblade Chronicles 2. I just want to get back to the game. And in this game, like, you do have these cinematic cutscenes. There is an actual story, but those cutscenes last maybe like 30 seconds to a minute to 2 minutes maybe.
Okay.
So yeah.
It sounds interesting. I mean, I was looking at after reading your review. I kind of looked. It does look gorgeous. There's no question about it. I was just wondering how it played and whether or not I'd be into it. But I might give that one a shot.
It's also not very hard. It's also not very easy. It's like, it's got that perfect balance, you know. It's like, it's right there in the middle. But the reason why like I prefer to use stealth is because I just like the idea of sneaking up on an enemy and executing a one hit kill. You know, it's just like, there's just something cool about it. It's. Anyhow, I think it's like an amazing game. It's like one of the best games on the Switch, hands down, and one of the best games released on the Switch this year. I think it's way better than The Messenger. Like, I like The Messenger to some extent. Like, we talked about it a while back, but The Messenger had its problems, and the problem with The Messenger for me was when it does shift halfway and turns into a completely different genre, there was just way too much repetition. And like, I like my Metroidvania games, but I felt that it was just a bit tedious and it overstayed its welcome. In this game, it doesn't overstay its welcome. I kind of felt like it was maybe an hour or two too short. Like, I could have used maybe two more levels. But it's like, the graphics are so clean. Like, the stages are clean. Like, we're going to talk about Super Smash later. It's not one of those games where it's overwhelming. There's a ton of things happening on screen, a ton of enemies flying at you. And it's just like, the graphics or the colors are just overwhelming. It's just the art direction, the just the look of it, like the visuals, it's just so beautiful to look at. I'm not just talking about the cinematics, I'm talking about the actual game.
Okay. Yeah, no, it looked good. I watched the trailer for it, so maybe I'll check that one out. Randy, have you been playing anything recently besides Smash? We're going to talk about Smash later, but anything else?
Yeah, I've been kind of, you know, I usually keep a healthy 3 or 4 different games running at the same time. One little thing I've been doing is they're about to release the multiplayer update for Stardew Valley on the Switch, so I've been preparing my ridiculously sized farm for other people to come join me in it. I have a friend who's been wanting to play the game, but doesn't want to just dive in by himself. So that's something I'm looking forward to. I discovered that game earlier this year. Well, I had heard about it, but I hadn't played it until it was on a Switch and ended up putting like 150 hours into it or something. I've also continuing to slowly make my way through Red Dead in chunks at a time, which is really turning into a study of like how a game's bad design choices can like fight again. Like, I feel like I'm watching the people designing the gameplay and the people designing like the actual aesthetics and philosophies of the game, like fight with each other. And what it makes for is kind of a really shitty game. Like, it's fun to be in the world of Red Dead, but to act and to play and to do stuff in the world of Red Dead has not been all that entertaining for me. So I haven't really played the game in big chunks. I find myself, I wander around for half an hour, I do one cool thing, I'm like, nah, okay, let's go play something else. Maybe I'm just ADD to the point where the relaxing, quiet nature of Red Dead isn't pulling me in, but holy shit, they spent a lot of money on a boring-ass game.
Yeah, I have heard. I mean, there definitely has been some pushback since that game came out about the gameplay aspects of it, which makes me wonder about all the rave reviews, but
nevertheless. It's just like, I don't want to shoot my horse in the head every time I want to get off of it. Like, I want to get off and get on my horse and pat my horse and be nice to my horse and feed him, not shoot him in the legs when I'm awkwardly trying to fumble around and not get shot by some idiot coming over from the next town. Whose friend is just going to rat me out anyway.
There's certainly been a lot of jokes about accidental shootings or horses going off of cliffs or bumping into a tree and dying, or you bump into
a guy. Horse genocide is real in Red Dead. That's what I learned about the Wild West, is everybody murdered their horses left and right.
I think there's the guy who reviewed it for Goomba Stomp, John Cal McCormick, wrote a great review, and it's great in the sense that I think he describes what people who like that kind of game, he will absolutely thrill them with his review. And for people like me, the way he wrote about it made me realize I would never want to play that game, because how he describes the gameplay to me is, it's abhorrent to me. I would never want to be involved in that. So I think, like, there are obviously people that are going to love stuff like that, and I think a good review will convince the people who will like it and warn the people who will not like it, and that's exactly what that review did. He loved it, but he made me realize I would not, so... I've heard it both ways with that game.
I honestly think my favorite part of playing that game at this point is seeing how slow things go and thinking about the people that are actually considering doing speedruns of that game and like, yo, how fast can we get down the tux? I think there's a Twitter feed that's just a bot that will let you know when there's been a new speedrun like record broken. And I saw somebody the other day like, oh, I beat GTA 5 in like 7 hours. And I was like, yeah, I beat Red Dead in like 46 hours and used a bunch of exploits. And I was like, yep, that's this game. And I turned it off. So, you know, besides that, it's end of the year. So I'm just kind of trying to finish up things that I didn't get around to doing earlier in the fall. Spider-Man, you know, I didn't go back and beat some of the extra bosses in God of War. So I tried to do that the other day and failed miserably, because when you don't play an action game for like 4 or 5 months, you don't remember how it controls. So
yeah, you got to get back in the flow for sure. Yeah, I've been doing a little bit of that myself, too, because Smash didn't really... Well, we'll get to that. But I've been catching up replaying Starlink, which I don't know how to explain it, but I really, really like that game a lot now. I don't know. I'm doing a second playthrough and going to 100% it. I don't know why I like that game so much. But
is that the game that you can get the like physical the toys, ship yeah. to fly I, around? I didn't, Do you have that stuff?
No, you don't have to get the toys. You can just buy the digital version, and it comes with all the ships and the weapons. And it's so much easier, more convenient that way anyway, so that you can just switch in-game as opposed to having to physically switch things out. The toys-to-life aspect of the game, I don't know anything about and don't really care. But the game itself, I enjoyed it quite a bit the first time, and I've liked it even more. I just played it on a harder difficulty, and I'm having even a better time doing that. I'm almost done with the second playthrough, too. So that's kind of taken up a lot of my time, aside from, you know, small indies and stuff like that, which is why Mark of the Ninja might be a good thing to do in between. Other than that, I played a game called SteamWorld Heist, which is an old game, you know, made by the same guys who make SteamWorld Dig and SteamWorld Dig 2, both of which I think are two of the best.
Ooh, that second one is fantastic.
2 is one of the best Metroidvanias out there. I mean, it just really is. It's a great, great game. I'm not SteamWorld Heist is a strategy game. I'm not quite as into it, as, or I beat it already, but I wasn't quite as into it as their Digs. But it was good for what it was. It was good. And it was short, and you know, it had just the right amount of challenge on the regular difficulty. So I enjoyed it. It was fine. It didn't captivate me as much as SteamWorld Dig 2.
Didn't steal your heart.
No. Yeah, exactly. It's got the same aesthetic, same robots, everything like that. It's got that steampunk thing. No, Dig 2 was just a phenomenal Metroidvania. Yeah, so that's all I've been playing. I don't know. I think I'm going to have to just do a... I'm playing something for a review right now, but I'll talk about that a little bit later. Different podcast. Isaac, what about you?
So a few weeks ago, I finished up my replaythrough of Paper Mario Thousand Year Door on GameCube, and recently been going back through Metroid Prime on GameCube 2, just kind of revisiting these old classics, and I'm playing them on the GameCube I actually got when I was a kid. It's my first console, and these are my original copies, so it's something kind of special with that.
God, Ricky, we are old.
Yeah.
Me too, Randy. Isaac is by far the... I think I'm older than Rick. By a couple of years, I believe.
It's like for us, it's just, well, I think for Patrick and me, it's the Super Nintendo was our first console.
No, the Atari 2600 was my first console.
What, was that yours, or was it your older siblings?
No, it was my dad's, but it was basically our family's first console, and I played it before an NES.
I had a 7200 with a joystick.
my first console was the Super Nintendo, but I have an older brother who gave me his Nintendo, his NES original. But that was my first console. But then if you look at Tim is like the N64 kid.
Yeah.
And then, you have like the GameCube kids over at GoombaStomp.com who keep on voting like Wind Waker is their favorite game of all time.
Yeah.
I mean, I was an NES kid, I guess you could say. That's when I first really started playing video games the most. And then the Super Nintendo is still my favorite console because I just think it has had the best games. But I'm an NES kid. So for GameCube being...
Let me ask you a question. So because the GameCube is the only video game console, Nintendo-wise, that I owned that no longer works. My nephews broke it.
Yeah.
So what I want to know is playing the GameCube now, with specifically the controller... And just the games themselves, like, how do they hold up?
Okay, so I have a CRT, right? I'm big on the original experience. It's my family's had for like 10 years, and like I got it, right? Playing it on a CRT, it's amazing. The hardware still holds up like really well. I've dropped this GameCube so many times when I was a kid on like solid concrete floors, and the disc would pop out and spin across the floor.
But it has a handle.
Yeah, and it still works, right? But I would like jump back and pull the controller cord, and the console would come flying. That's generally what would happen. But today, it looks and plays just as great as it did when I was a kid. Now, with the composite cables that come with the GameCube, yeah, it doesn't look that great, even on a CRT. But I got some S-Video cables for my GameCube, and I plugged those in the back, and man, it looks really good. And if you got one of the original GameCubes, so like the DOL 001 GameCubes, they're actually compatible with HDMI adapters that are out now. And so you can like plug them into your HDMI enabled TVs, and it's like a really crisp 480p image. Mine's one of the later models. It's like a DOL 101, so it's analog only. But S-Video looks like really clean. And on this 480i CRT I've got, I'm like, wow, these games just pop in a way that they haven't since I was a kid, right? And I was playing them on RF. But
because the reason why I ask, well, first of all, I have the original model. It no longer works because my nephew dropped it. It's funny, Randy, you joke around about it having a handle, and yet it's the one Nintendo console that we happen to drop more times than every other Nintendo console. But because I actually just got the GameCube controller for Smash.
Yeah.
And I found it like at first I was just like, it's been so long since I used the GameCube controller that I just ended up going back to the Pro controller. I'm going to back and use the GameCube controller because like I bought it and I spent my money and I bought it specifically for Smash. And I know eventually I'm going to prefer it, but I need to get accustomed to it because it's been a while. It's been a long time since I've actually used a GameCube controller. Actually, that's not true. I had the GameCube controller, which I was playing the last Smash game for the Wii U because I had the adapter. But then what happened was the controllers broke. So it's been like about 2 years since I've used a Wii GameCube controller.
Yeah, I use one all the time. I played a ton of Smash Wii U, something like 380 hours. And so I use the GameCube controller for that like all the time. And I still have my original GameCube controllers when I was a kid. My original one that has like one of my dogs chewed on it still works or whatever. Another one, two other ones I got from my uncle. Right?
You know what's funny is like Isaac saying he still has his original GameCube GameCube controllers from when he was a kid. I still have my original GameCube controller from when I was in my 20s, out of college.
Yeah, and the crazy thing was, right, I got my GameCube in, like, 2003. It was the Metroid Prime bundle. And, like, so it's like, you know, that was my childhood console. And for you guys, that was, like, what, college, you know,
that was after
high school?
College for me. I played an N64 in college.
Yeah, I used to play in Melee tournaments in college.
Yeah, yeah, I didn't. I was a teenager when, like, the Wii U came out. So, I mean, it's a while back. But as for how it holds up today, the GameCube experience is still really good. I love the controller. Still my favorite controller of all time. For the experiences designed on the GameCube, it fits perfectly because every designer, at least Nintendo-based designer of the GameCube, based their inputs on that controller. So, for example, Paper Mario, you do nearly everything with the A button. That's why it's so big, right? You do everything. You do a lot of stuff in Metroid and Metroid Prime with that A button, and, you know, being able to fire the super missile by, you know, charging up and then taking your thumb and putting the tip of it on Y, you know, to shoot a super missile, right? Stuff like that. It's all designed well around it. Super Mario Sunshine with the analog triggers on the sides, stuff like that, that I think still works great today. Now, the GameCube is a little loud today. I've noticed that when I'm playing it. It's like, sounds like a jet engine. That's no worse than like a launch PS4, right? And that's like extremely loud.
Yeah, well, so, that's mostly to do with the disc spinning, though.
Yeah, I mean, you know, honestly, this is one of their most compact consoles. Like, for its time, it was extremely powerful and very power efficient and quiet. And it's just, I'm actually amazed how good these games look today, right? So as a kid, Town Overworld impressed me, you know, on GameCube, you know, in Metroid Prime. Today, it still impresses me what they were able to pull off. Like, the water has ripples in it in a GameCube game from 2002. And that's just, that's crazy to me, right? You fire in the water, it ripples and stuff like that. And Digital Foundry, their retro division, did an amazing breakdown of Metroid Prime a year ago. And they went to great lengths about how just visually impressive it was. I mean, they went from something like 500,000 polygons on the Nintendo 64 to like 3 million with GameCube. And so, right, it just opened up this whole new world of just incredible design. But for Metroid Prime, this could be controversial, but I prefer the original control scheme on GameCube over the Wii control scheme. I like that clunky controller style that they used for Metroid Prime 1 and 2 over the pointer controls of Metroid Prime 3.
Interesting.
But wait.
I could never go back to that after the Wii version. The Wii version.
Do you know, I actually prefer the GameCube.
Really?
Yeah.
It locks on. Controls? Man, I don't know. The Wii version is so smooth.
It is very smooth, but the game was designed with it in mind. And so, like, being able to, like, I know you can adjust it in settings, but being able to lock on the enemy directly is something I really like in the original control scheme. And I don't know, it's just probably a habit with it. I've gotten used to it. Now, when I came back from playing the Wii version, I was like, oh my gosh, this is terrible. But since I've got used to it, I'm like, I can see what they were doing. It feels natural now because they never really designed a lot of stuff where you have to look up or look down. Most of the time, it's just looking straight ahead. So it works fine. There's some puzzles where you have to look up, and that's really a big pain. You have to hold down the R button or whatever. But yeah, like, I'm just impressed how good these games are. Like Paper Mario, right? Thousand Year Door was amazing. I had a lot of fun going back through that again. You know, original Metroid Prime still holds up. Still, why it's like my second favorite game of all time. It's just timeless in its design.
Yeah. And with that in mind, I think we should take a quick break, and we should finally get to it. Get to the main event. Duke it out over Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. We'll be back in a second.
For centuries, we have stayed hidden. We shunned the modern world and its jackals. But today, our enemies have found us. We must strike back. We will fight for our survival and our honor. I foresaw this day would come. And so, I called upon a champion to fight for us. He has accepted the first mark. He will defend the clan at a terrible cost.
All right, guys, we are back, and we are here to talk about the biggest game for Nintendo's holiday season. One of the biggest games on the Switch is
Super Mario Party.
No, we talked about that already. No, Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, of course. A lot of people have been waiting for this one. It's a system seller. These are one of Nintendo's basically their prime franchises for raking in cash, right? Like Smash Brothers always sells, like Mario Kart does, and like Mario does, basically.
Everybody's here. Give us your money.
It's one of their pillars of money making. So, but what did we actually think of the game? Now, I'm going to step back from this because I've never been a Smash fan. I have never really played a lot of it. I've never owned one until Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. So, as somebody who's not a longtime Smash player, I don't really think my opinion is all that, pertinent to this discussion, but I will give it. Randy and Isaac, you both have a pretty long history of Smash, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and except so for Smash Rick. 4. Smash 4, I didn't play much.
I didn't play any Smash 64. I played the rest, so.
And Rick, you've played every Smash as well, right?
Well, I'm a huge fan of fighting games. I mean, I grew up in the arcades. I talked about this on the podcast. I wrote like a 2,000-word article about me growing up at the arcade. That is how I met a lot of my good friends as a teenager, playing Street Fighter 2, playing Mortal Kombat. Lately, I haven't been so hot on a lot of the fighting games. Like, I wasn't a big fan of Street Fighter 5. I think it's a complete hot mess. It does not help that Capcom is doing everything to squeeze money out of everyone's pockets by charging for every single DLC character when they could have put some of those characters in the game at launch. Now, I don't know if you guys heard, they're actually putting advertisements within the game. Like can you imagine playing a video game and like a video advertisement pops up? Like,
in I mean, if game? I can get a Blanca Dr. Pepper outfit, might be more
of wouldn't you Listen, like to be I'll, a Pepper too? That's what they're asking.
All I gotta say, for anyone who has issues with Super Smash Ultimate for the Nintendo Switch, just thank God Capcom did not make this game. I'm a huge fan of the Wii U version, and I know a lot of people, especially on Goomba Stomp, are not big fans of the Smash Brothers Wii U, but the reason why I like that game so much more than Melee is, and I guess Brawl, although I really do like Brawl, it's because I just kind of felt that, okay, aside from the fact that there were so many characters and so many stages, and it just looked gorgeous for the Wii U at least, I felt that it was the most accessible game. Like, I felt like anyone could have picked up that game and had fun playing it. It wasn't as overwhelming as like the GameCube version, and even this new version, which we can talk about, it is extremely overwhelming. So if you're like a first time player, if you bring over your friends and you just want to like play some Smash, I could see it being overwhelming for a lot of people.
Definitely agree. Yeah, definitely.
And I kind of felt like the Wii U version, and I get it. Like, I think most people who have been playing Smash for like 20 years now, we wanted a game that was a little faster. That was a little tougher, more on the competitive side. And I kind of feel like the new game finds the right balance, whereas the Wii U version was just a perfect game to play with a bunch of friends who don't necessarily play Smash on a weekly or daily basis like some of us. That said, I do think, so here's the thing. Harry Morris, who's been on the show, wrote the review for us on the website. And he initially slapped a 7 on 10. That was his score. And now, we've talked about this plenty of times on the podcast. I really just don't care much about review scores. But on our website, just to simplify things, like, the idea is that a 7 basically means the game is good. An 8 means the game is great. A 9 means it's like one of the best games of the year. Like, it's in consideration for a top 20 list. A 10 means it transcends the genre. It's groundbreaking. You know, whatever. So he gave it a 7. And I was like, I don't think, by reading your review, the game deserves a 7 by reading his review, because in his review, he's basically saying the game is great except for the single-player mode, which is World of Light.
Yeah.
So we went back and forth. I think he swapped it to an 8, then eventually went back to a 7. The whole point I'm trying to make here is that if I had reviewed the game, I would have maybe have given it like a 7.5 to 8 as well. And again, like... do what you will with review scores. Like I said, I don't really care much about review scores. But what I'm trying to say here is I enjoy this game. It is the most fun I've had playing a video game in 2018, apart from maybe NBA 2K18, because I have these crazy NBA 2K tournaments, which is just a blast to play through. Aside from NBA 2K18, this is the most fun I've ever had with a video game over the past, 12 months, right? But it has problems, and those problems need to be addressed. And because it has these issues, I kind of agree with Harry with the 7 on 10 as opposed to the 10 on 10, which a lot of websites are giving, when they are overlooking the online mode. I mean, online is just like a nightmare. You want to talk about lag. You can't even play the damn game. The single-player mode, I'm not a big fan of, although I'm warming up to it slowly. Same but here. The actual game itself is fantastic because it's Super Smash Brothers. I mean, you get what you got with the Wii U, but it looks better, it moves faster, it moves better, the control system's better, there's more characters, more stages. But here's my question for you guys. So given the fact that really technically, if you put aside the World of Light, which a lot of people are not big fans of, they gave us like – How many new characters do we have? We have 4 new stages, and like, what is it?
Eight new characters? Yeah.
Right. So my question for you guys, and I know the answer, but I kind of want to know what you guys think. Why not just port the Wii U version to the Switch, add the extra 8 characters and the 4 stages instead of rebuilding it from the ground up and giving people things that they don't necessarily want and not including things that we liked and maybe wanted from the previous game?
Well, I think a lot of that comes down to just the general design philosophy behind Smash. They've never ported a Smash before, and I think Sakurai takes pride in that. And I think he wanted to make some changes that make it more digestible for the competitive community. I think they're really after that sort of esport design for this game.
Bingo. That's the answer I was looking for. Continue.
And I think that he, like I said, I just think that's it in his blood, is to redesign games. He's done it this quick or quicker before. I mean, Melee was designed in something crazy like a year and a half, and he had like 2.5 years to make Smash 4. He had 2.5 years to make this game. It's just generally the guy works on an insane time crunch.
Yeah.
So,
see, the thing is that, and Patrick, we got to get to you soon because you have a completely different opinion of the game as I, and I think anyone else here in this room. But the thing is, they did keep the competitive scene in mind. It's like they made this game more so for those people that play Smash at competitions, at tournaments. And I think that's kind of important for Nintendo. Nintendo needs to break into the esports scene on a bigger scale. Like, I mean, Smash is big, but they need to really like get in there because esports is huge. And that's why I say like the game is and can be overwhelming for a lot of people. Not just, for example, small things, guys. The interface, like, it is so baffling that
you think someone... so?
Oh my god.
It totally is.
Do you know that if you want to save the game, and not that you have to because it automatically saves.
World of Light.
World of Light. If you want to find the save button, it's under options.
Yeah, I know. I thought that was
so
crazy.
Bizarre. I think the interface is just
Well, because it's optional.
Well, no, but the thing is I'm not complaining. It's just the actual interface mirrors the game. It's so like chaotic and so bonkers, so over the place. But if you are a first time Smash player, you load up that screen, and this even happened to me. I was like, where do I go first? There's so much to do.
Well, I mean, to be fair, and this is something Game Explain YouTube channel pointed out in their review, I mean, Smash 4's menus were a mess. This is way better than what, you know, Smash 4 had in terms of menus. Their menus were notoriously bad in terms of UI design. There were so many different like sub menus and everything, and I think they've cleaned that up a lot for this. At least I thought so. Now, it's not as clean as something like Melee's were. You know, Melee had like probably the cleanest title screen and menus of any of the Smash games so far. But I think it's way better than it was on Wii U and 3DS because it was a mess on those.
The only thing that really bothers me about the menu is when you're at the main menu. Okay, so I have this weird thing where if I have like the Red Dead, the weapon wheel, or any kind of those menus that are circular, I like to be able to take my joystick and do a quick 360 with it and have it go all the way around. You can't do that on the main screen of Smash for some reason. For some reason, you have to like use the joystick as like a just like a four-directional pad, and you have to like go up, down, up, up, down. And it just bugs me. It's the only thing that annoys me about the menu system in this game, and now not having played 4 at all, I have no idea what those menus look like.
But you're not overwhelmed by, say, looking at the maps? Like, you have like 103 maps, these small like thumbnail images for each map. And
I know, but there's not much they could have done. That, I mean, unless grouping them under series or something. I mean, that's just a that's a thing. It's a gluttony of stages.
I think you hovering over them should have produced a larger image. You can't really even tell what you're supposed to be looking at.
Yeah,
so,
that's a good point.
I mean, they could have at least given you that. So you they're so tiny that
The
10,000 changes, but not the menus.
Yeah, the stage bloat is a big problem. I've noticed. I just have played on maybe 12 stages of the 104 so far, right? So
it needs a search function, like desperately, or just a sorting function, as you can
sort by series.
Okay, these are the six ones from Super Mario Brothers, near the five stages from Castlevania or whatever, and then it would just be easier to tell. Because for those little thumbnail images, there's no way you're picking out a. So I saw a stage, I was like, oh, let me show you this stage to my buddy the other day, and then I was like, 5 minutes later, I was like, well, I guess we'll just play random.
All right, but yeah. I mean, I think the menus are still better than they used to be, but overall, in terms of, the stage bloat, like I said, is a big problem. I think they should have done a grouping by series, but other than that, I don't know what else they would do to confront that. It's just a problem. It's a gluttony of
itches. I think the reason why I bring this up, and again, like, I love this game, it's just because, like, the point I'm trying to make here is that it is overwhelming for anyone who has played the game before.
Definitely.
And I'm trying to, like, transition to Patrick and his opinion of the game. Because the thing about Smash is, this is the kind of game where, like, you're either into the competitive fighting scene and you're okay to play the game by yourself for, like, hundreds and hundreds of hours.
Yeah.
I'm not saying everyone. I'm just saying, like, most people, and or you have a bunch of people to play with, right? But the thing is, if you don't have a bunch of people to invite over to your house, and, you know, I mentioned this because, like, when you get older, you're not surrounded by, like, 400 kids in your high school, and then out of the 400, there's maybe, like, 100 who have the Nintendo Switch and Super Smash, and you can invite any one of these kids over to your house. When you get older, like, I'm sorry, nobody at my workplace, we have a Nintendo Switch at my work, and nobody, at least on my floor, plays a Switch. The Switch is on the third floor of this company, right? And so, like, I'm lucky because I have two nephews, and my nephews have, like, hundreds of friends who all have a Nintendo Switch, and they all play Super Smash. So over the weekend, I had, like, 20 teenagers over, and we were playing Super Smash, which was a complete blast. But if you don't have people to come over, and you can't rely on the online mode, that is a huge problem.
Now, here's the thing. All right, as somebody who doesn't have anybody coming over to play video games, to me, that wasn't my problem with Smash. So for anybody who knows, I bought Smash, first Smash Brothers game I've ever purchased, and I was really looking forward to, like, going into it and giving Smash a solid shot, a chance that I'd never given it before, really. Like, putting some time in to get to know fighters, and I was going to be really patient with it and try to really, like, play different fighters and start to learn the differences. I mean, I really had no idea what I was doing, period. I'd maybe played Smash for a total of 2 hours in my life, and that, you know, all the games combined. So I put in maybe 5 hours into this one. I think I unlocked, I don't know. By the end, I had like 25 characters or something. My problem isn't with the single-player content, because there is a lot of it. And I didn't have a problem with World of Light. I thought it was set up fine.
I think it's a really good mode.
Yeah, whether
actually.
It's, you find it tedious or not, I never found it tedious. My only problem with Smash, and the way I know that it's not the game for me, is that I hate the way the game feels, period. I don't like the way it controls. I don't like the way the characters feel. I don't like the way movement feels, and I don't like the way impact feels, and I feel like there's an input lag between when I push the buttons to do something and when the characters actually do it. And
absolutely
hate that in a fighting game.
So they did a study, they did a test, and this Smash game has the most input lag of any Smash game so far. It has 100 milliseconds just on the input, right, which is like a tenth of a second.
Okay, so that's a thing with this game, like, that's being acknowledged, because that was driving me bonkers.
But so and what TV are you playing on, too? Because if you're playing, like, a 4K TV, right, with, like, HDR, it's going to be another...
Play on a 4K TV. Yeah, that's the thing. Like, so I started... When I booted up Smash for like, the first time, my nephew right away, within, like, 2 minutes, like, after playing one match, he's like, we got to change the TV settings. You can't play in 4K. It's automatically going to slow things down. So, like...
But the Switch doesn't even run in 4K. I mean, I have a 4K
Well, that's the
TV.
Thing. But if the Switch doesn't run in 4K and you're playing on a 4K TV and you haven't adjusted your settings, and this applies to many video games,
have a 4K TV and I was feeling the lag. So...
Oh, yeah, me too. Yeah, right.
So the weird thing about the lag is I read that article, or at least the article that addressed that problem in the study. But the weird thing about this game is it actually runs faster than the two previous installments. It runs faster and smoother than the last game on the Wii U and the game for the Wii, the Brawl.
In what terms?
In
what terms does it run faster? Like, what do you mean?
Apparently, like, there is a lag, but apparently they say the game runs faster than...
The loading and everything is definitely faster in that regard. I get what you mean, yeah.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, for me, that did really affect it, though. And I think, like, I couldn't... When I can't do what I want to do, when my brain says, hey, I got to make this move now, and you got to have lightning-fast reflexes, because that's, to me, that's what fighting games are. They're reactive, you know, they're sometimes proactive games, but I'm a reactive player when it comes to fighting games a lot of the time. And yeah. I need to make my decision in an instant, and that was not happening. It was really frustrating to know what move I needed to do and exactly when I needed to do it, but I couldn't. Or if I needed to time a tilt smash or something like that, and I'd miss, even though because I could never figure out exactly when I was supposed to time it when a character was falling, say, or something like that. I could never get that timing right because I never got comfortable in the 5 hours that I played this game. I never got comfortable with how the characters move or anything about it. And so for me, that was kind of it. I didn't want to subject myself to it anymore when I wasn't actually having fun with the way the game felt. So I don't want to rip on Smash and all the people love it. I'm not trying to say that this is a bad game. This is me personally, that, you know, my own thing, and it's not for me. I gave it a shot for the first time. And
yeah, I think the reason why I love the game so much, though, the series, is that despite the fact that there is a lag, like that lag technically is not... I mean, it's noticeable, but I mean,
it just makes it play more like something like Tekken, or maybe some of the heavier characters in Mortal Kombat 10, which
is that's part of the strategy. Like, even in the previous Smash games, like, sometimes you have to wait like a split second to do a move because it's like your character has to like recharge, or your character has whatever. Like timing is everything in Smash, and like that's one of the things I love. And I don't play the competitive scene, but I do get pretty competitive when I play with my friends or my nephews. And like, I feel like you know, I can, like, I went to the arcade, like I told the story a million times on podcast, I went to the arcade like two years ago or last summer, I think it was, with my nephews downtown Montreal, and I told them I'm gonna go in the Street Fighter game and then we're gonna go to the movie. We never made it to the movie because I was on the Street Fighter game 2.5 hours later with one quarter. Nobody was able to beat me. So like the point I'm trying to make here is that I'm pretty good at Street Fighter, better at Street Fighter than Smash. But the thing about Street Fighter is I find it's kind of like a simple fighting game, at least the original, like Street Fighter 2. Like, some people argue that and are like, no, it's kind of complex, whatever. I'm like, okay,
yeah,
whatever.
It's actually way too Brothers. Complicated for me, but I've never...
It's complex for the day, but you can approach that game in a simple way and still be successful.
I guess I've always found it way too complicated. Like, I haven't liked the barrier of entry being the inputs in games. Like, that's
just... practice those quarter circles, my friend.
Yeah, that's why I don't. That's the one reason I do not like it.
Seeing that, right? I love.
That's Street why none Fighter of my friends too. Will play me in Street Fighter. I haven't been able to get anybody to play me in Street Fighter for 10 years.
I mean, it's funny when I was talking to the clerk, I was telling him why I was turning Smash back in, and one of them was that, like, I would much rather. My mind kept flashing back to Street Fighter 2 and how much better I could have been doing if this was Street Fighter 2.
But you can do quarter circles with Ryu in this game.
Yeah, you can.
He's waiting.
The one thing I want to differentiate is the difference between like actual lag in the game and lag in characters' movesets, because there is a lot of like landing lag
I think is different.
I'm like a solid Ganon main, right? If I put like hours, like 50 hours on him only in like Smash 4, and I'm playing him in Ultimate when I unlocked him, and I have like a 1 millisecond response time monitor. I play this on like 144 hertz one, right? And so I plugged it up and I'm playing, and I can still feel a little bit of lag. It's just a tiny bit, not from Ganon. Ganon's been sped up a lot, right? He's a lot faster than he was in Smash 4. I can feel it just from the game itself. And a lot of pro players have noticed this and pointed out. It's on Reddit all the time. There's just a tiny bit of lag that just makes it just annoying enough. And just even in offline matches, like I said, with a character I've played a lot, it's actually faster now. He still feels laggier than he did in the previous game, just because it's a game difference. A lot of people are hoping they'll patch that out this upcoming week.
Well, that's the thing. I think the thing is, the game just got released. There's for sure going to be a patch. I mean, they actually have they had an announcement, I think it was yesterday.
Yeah.
Saying we're going to patch the game and blah 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 blah. So they're going to be patching up, and like they're going to patch the game. They're going to like address these issues. Let's talk about what's amazing in this game.
Yes.
First of all, Stage Morph. The Stage Morph to me is a game.
Oh, yeah. It's awesome.
It's absolutely incredible, genius. Like, the fact that you could even choose when you want your stage to morph. Like, you want to wait a minute? You want to wait a minute and a half? Like, you can actually choose. The fact that there's 103 stages, but technically you can morph every stage, you know? So, like, the possibilities, like, we're going into our, like, our thousands? Like, I'm bad at math here, guys. That is, like, probably my favorite feature. I've been playing a lot of Classic Mode. I actually beat Classic Mode at its whatever level. What is it, level 9?
9.9, yeah.
9.9?
Really?
Wow. Yeah, with Ike. So I've been playing a lot of Classic Mode. I've been taking my sweet time with the game. I didn't want to be one of those people that unlocked every single character within like an hour because they were trying to find like the easiest way and the fastest way.
I totally did that.
Is that possible?
Yeah, totally did that. All you have to do is enter the game, fight a match, like die really quickly, and then they'll load up a challenger, you beat them, exit out the game on the home menu, go back in, do the same thing. I did that for 5 hours because I wanted to play Ganon. That's all I cared about playing.
I'm taking my sweet time. And you know, that's one of the things that's, I actually think it's really smart that they only included 8 characters at the start.
I hated that.
Well, it's the original 8 characters, so I think that's like a nice callback to the original game. But the thing is, it kind of like, especially if you've never played Smash before, it feels so rewarding to unlock a new character. And when you get the screen, when it says a new challenger approaches and it's the characters in silhouette, every time we got that screen, like everyone just flipped out. Even if it was a character we didn't care for, like Isabelle showed up and we were like flipping out. We're like, you know, it's like Isabelle. And then we get her and we're like, oh, whatever. No one's going to play with her. But like, for me personally, like, you know, again, playing it with a bunch of teenagers over like 3 days nonstop. It was a total blast. Every single time we got a new character unlocked, it was like amazing. In terms of like the new characters, I prefer out of the new characters, I think Richter is my personal favorite. He might even be my favorite in the game, period.
I've heard a lot of people like Richter.
Well, he's got this killer uppercut. He's got a great final smash. I love the callbacks to the Castlevania games. He's fast. He's just like he can attack from far. He can attack from close. He's just easy to move. He like, I don't know. He's just like amazing.
Yeah, he's a really good character in terms of design. He's perfect for countering a lot of the cast, and he's got that really annoying holy water. Right, his down B is extremely annoying, especially when you're something playing like Ganon and he like camps you with it. And he has such a great ability to keep away the opponent and everything. But just in terms of the characters, from my perspective as like a player who's mainly just interested in getting in there and getting into competitive. I hated it. Like, it just felt like it took forever to unlock everybody. And the fact that there was no specific way to unlock characters you wanted to play and that you couldn't unlock them through Ward of Light, which is what I was hoping, just was really a big drag because, like, I play one character in Smash. I just play Ganon, really, right? Don't really play.
You can unlock them.
Yeah, you can unlock them in Ward of Light. That's how I got
You just keep playing. It's based on a time. It's based, it's like every 10 minutes.
When you run into
a character in World of Light, when you actually have to fight a character, you will unlock that character.
Main menu.
Yep, I fought Marth. I had not unlocked him. And I actually went to go test this out.
You unlock them outside of World of Light mode, they're not available in World of Light mode. Until
exactly. But if you play 10 minutes of World of Light and you go to the main menu, it'll pop up.
I did, and I have like 50 something characters at this point. I haven't done the home screen stuff at all.
Well, maybe I didn't go into it deep enough. Honestly, that's my bad. Because when I first started World of Light,
Give me your Smash expert card now.
Yeah, it wasn't really. I didn't like it, so I was like, forget this. I'm just gonna cheese and unlock all the characters quick. But I didn't like World of Light at first. Like Rick said, it's kind of growing on me. But I just really did not care.
I just love how thoughtful all the challenges are. You know, like fighting a Snorlax that's a purple King K. Rool that's massive and just stands there.
Well, yeah.
You know, the thing, Mega Man bosses that are fights in there, like just how deep they went into the bench of Nintendo video game history and like Capcom and Namco and all that stuff and seeing what they built around it is fun.
Yeah. It's not even just like Easter eggs, you know, because Easter eggs are not always clever. It's like basically an Easter egg is like they just drop something in the game. Sometimes they're clever, sometimes they're not. It could just be something in the background. This is like they're paying homage to the history of Nintendo and the whole entire history of Nintendo. I mean, apparently there's 1,297 spirits.
And yeah, there's a lot.
What do you guys think of the spirit system?
I don't like it at
all.
It's
cool, but there's way too many.
Yeah, there's too many, and I miss my trophies. I'll be honest. I love the trophies in previous games. I loved him in Smash 4 and just the descriptions you got with him and everything. This feels like a ripoff of that stickers system from Brawl. It's like an enhanced version of that, which I did not like stickers in Brawl. And it just doesn't – I don't care for it very much. Now, upgrading them and stuff is fine, but I still wish we had trophies. And I think they were a lot superior to the spirits as they're currently constructed. But
yeah, I mean, so from my understanding, the problem with the trophies, it was just too time consuming and it would require too much of Nintendo's resources because of the 3D modeling. Is that correct?
Yeah, the 3D modeling was the big deal. But
right. But you know, the thing is, at the same time, like, here's the thing, like, when you're playing World of Light, like, so at first I wasn't fond of the single player mode because I was like, okay, so it's kind of like tedious and repetitive and I'm playing with Kirby for like the good, you know, first like whatever, like hour.
Yeah.
And I would just prefer to be playing like classic mode or just with my friends. But then, like, you know, when you build up the game and you have this incredible cinematic scene that's part of your marketing campaign, and you're selling the game like that, right? But then I've only seen two cutscenes so far, and I was told there's only three.
One at the beginning, one at the middle, and one at the end is what I
said. So I understand it costs money to be making these cinematic cutscenes, but it's also one of your biggest games. It's actually your biggest game of 2018, and you're going to make a lot of money selling Smash. But you're also advertising, so you're giving us that expectation. So that's kind of disappointing. So, like, I don't know. I don't really know what I was expecting from single player mode. I just knew we would get a lot of, like, callbacks to older games, which is cool. And it's good to see these characters, these obscure characters, some of which I don't even know who the hell they are. You know what I mean? Like, you see characters who come from, like, Japanese games that never got released here in, like, North America. So all that's good, but you know, there's all these other things that's included in this game that no one's really talking much about. And I don't know about you guys, but, one of my favorite modes is when you can fight 5-on-5. So you pick a team of five, or you can even do 3-on-3, and it's like a tag team mode, right?
It's like
so
King of like, Fighters almost.
Yeah. So I pick my five fighters. Awesome. You pick your five fighters and then you just battle it out. Like, I love that. I also like the fact that you can have like a tournament mode in which, basically, when you select the character, regardless if you win or lose, like, you, no one can select that character ever again. So if you have like all 72 fighters, you just keep on playing until, you know, say like if I'm playing with Randy, like once I have say like 41 wins or whatever it is, then I automatically win because like, but you can't ever use the same character like twice in that tournament. I like the fact that you can set up your own tournament, you know, which is great if you have a bunch of friends over. So there's like these little additions that I love, and some of this was in previous games and there are things missing from previous games that are not in this game. But that said, like, we can't necessarily have everything from the previous game because then we would be technically getting a port. Like, it's still got to be a new game and a game in itself and have its own sort of identity. And it kind of is suffering because it doesn't really technically have an identity. And that's I think the main problem with this game is like when you talk about novelty, like, it feels like every single Super Smash game had something that made it stand out from the previous game. And I don't think World of Light is enough to make it stand out from the Wii U version. Yes, it has additional characters. King K. Rool is incredible. He's also OP. It has Simon Belmont. You know, we're going to get the Joker, which we can eventually talk about from Persona 5. But we were getting additional characters on the Wii U version with the DLC, right? We got Bayonetta, we got Cloud, we got Ryu. So, like, the thing is like, apart from World of Light, like, I kind of feel like there's just something that makes it stand like this. It doesn't feel like enough of a new game. It feels like it's in between a port and them making a new game that's kind of unfinished.
I don't know if I agree with that. I think it has enough, at least in the way the gameplay feels. It feels significantly different from Smash 4. And like the art style has been tweaked a lot, especially for several of the characters. And just generally, I feel like it has a different identity.
It does look better. It looks gorgeous. But look, we only got four new stages.
Yeah,
how many new stages did we get in all previous Smash games?
But that comes down to the time thing. Sakurai talked about how long it took when he's making Smash 4 to make stages. He said stages are a big pain. He's talking about the Star Fox stage, where, you know, you're fighting around Corneria or whatever, the new one that was included in Smash 4. He said that one took a year of development time. It was a group of people working on it, but it did take a whole year for that group of people to get that stage done. Stages take way more work than trophies and developing new fighters. He basically said they're one of the most intensive things to do. And that's what I think why we didn't get any more stages. And he brought back all those old stages from Melee and from Brawl that were cut. A lot of them, like Fountain of Dreams and stuff.
By the way, look amazing.
And
they
look gorgeous.
Whatever. But I think that's the thing. Like you said it earlier, is that all of these issues, at least the issues I have with the game, I think are going to get resolved within time. Eventually, we're going to get more stages. We're going to get more characters. Even more music. Like when we get the Joker from Persona 5, we're going to get, I believe, a stage, and we're going to get if we're lucky, we're going to get two music tracks.
Yeah, about two.
But the thing is, and I know a lot of people aren't necessarily happy about the Joker being the selection because they haven't played Persona 5. I'm actually excited about it for two reasons. First of all, I'm really excited to see what the stage will look like. Because if you've ever played and or seen Persona 5, just the art style is it's gorgeous, right?
And I wonder if it's going to be the downtown, or are they going to stick it in somebody's dream, like one of the dream stages?
I think it's going to be. I think the stage will be the casino, guaranteed.
Oh yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, there's a lot of sexual innuendos in that game, so there's a lot of things they would stay clear of. But the casino is kind of like a safe zone.
The safe vice.
I guess.
Yeah.
But then I think of the music that they can add from that game, and I think it's an excellent choice, actually. And the one thing we were arguing about this, debating it on Workplace, is I think you said you wanted Goku from Dragon Ball, and I have this thing where I firmly believe that no character should be added to Super Smash unless the character was originally a video game character. We would open up the floodgates. Are we going to put Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, who originally were characters from a
game? Yeah, because they had some of the best action games on the Super NES. I think they would have a great – I think if you're going to put one character, they're already in Injustice, so I don't think they would show up here. But if you're going to put one character in there –
you're opening up the floodgates, because then do you put Superman? Do you put Spider-Man? You know, if you put in Goku...
Talking about Nintendo, and they're going to curate the list that they put in there. That's why the Joker feels like such a smart move on their part.
Right.
Because now they're going to announce Persona for the Smash next year.
Have an incredible fighting game for Nintendo Switch called Dragon Ball Fighters.
And here's
Jump Force coming out, which, you know, I played it.
Here's my thing with the Goku thing. Is it mainly just a joke pick? I would love to see it happen. It's never going to happen. I don't expect them to put it in there. It doesn't make sense to. I actually was not a fan of the Joker announcement, mainly because this is our third representative from M-rated series. And I just don't think Nintendo doesn't really scream M-rated at you, right? I mean, they already have Bayonetta, which was pushing the limits for me. I hated that pick in Smash 4. And they have Snake, who's, Snake. And they have Cloud from, it's kind of one of the more violent Final Fantasy games, right? I don't know where it's going with this. I don't like the general, it's supposed to be, in my opinion, it's supposed to be kind of colorful and family friendly is what I think of. When I think of Smash, I think of that. And I don't think Persona screams colorful. It screams colorful, but it doesn't scream family friendly,
it's
right?
Colorful. And I think that's the thing. I'm going to be interested to see how they actually designed the stages in this final Smash, to see those beautiful, bright, the art design of the Persona 5. It looks like an Andy Warhol video game. But the thing is, they go for the protagonist all the time, and they usually go for the protagonist of the most popular game. In this case, it's Persona 5. But it could mean a few things. First of all, there is a slight possibility, even though I think it's unlikely, that Persona 5 could come to the Switch. Technically, Sony has probably sold as many copies as they possibly can of Persona 5 on the Sony PlayStation 4.
What about Persona 4 Golden? If just putting the Persona name out there for the Switch gets people.
But they specifically picked a Persona 5 look. Thing is, they still have an SMT game coming out next year, right? Plus, Randy said, there has been Persona games released on Nintendo Switch.
Joker was actually on a game released in Japan, I believe.
It was one of those spin-offs, right? On 3DS
Q2,
or something.
I think. Persona Q2.
That's another thing. He's never been on much. I know Cloud wasn't, right? He was in the Theater Rhythm spin-offs for Final Fantasy. But he's never really been in anything Nintendo related. He's on a Sony platform, right?
Gotta get that money.
In a way,
I know.
It's appealing to video game fans of all shapes and forms there, I think, by putting somebody like Cloud on there. And he technically was on there, and Snake was technically on the GameCube.
Twin Snakes. Yeah.
Sony would just make their
Bayonetta
fighting
is
game
the most
again.
Nintendo.
We wouldn't
of all
have
those
this issue.
Bayonetta 2 is
it might as well be Nintendo now. It essentially is Nintendo is carrying Bayonetta 4. Now two out of the three games are going to be Nintendo exclusives. So to me, that one is they may have put that character on there because they pretty much knew they were going forward with Bayonetta, and that was going to be their property, so to speak, from now on. So that one, you're right. Bayonetta is, she's M-rated, no question about that, but she's definitely on the lighter side of it. The violence is cartoonish and...
But let's not forget that they have a good relationship with Square Enix, and they've planned this, like you said, it takes like a year just to make a stage and God knows how long to make a character. So they had it planned way in advance. And Final Fantasy 7, 10, 12, like, I mean, Final Fantasy games are getting ported to Switch. So yeah. I'm sure they've had this in the works. Like, they've been thinking about this for a long time. So that's why when it comes down to the Joker from Persona 5, like, there's guaranteed to be some sort of, like, in the, like, something's in the pipeline. Like, I mean, I don't know if Persona 5 will ever stand a chance, see the light of day coming on the Nintendo Switch, but like I said, they
I would finally finish that game.
But what I would actually prefer? I would prefer to have Tokyo Mirage Sessions come to Nintendo Switch, have that game ported, which, you know, didn't really stand a chance on the Wii U because there was only so many people that actually bought a Wii U, and out of those people, like, how many of them would actually buy?
That was a niche in a niche there.
It also released really late into the Wii U when everybody knew it was dead and were waiting for Nintendo's next console because it had been...
Like 2016 or something?
Yeah, it was... Yeah. I mean, we were all waiting to see what Switch was going to be, and nobody really cared about the Wii U anymore. It was dead. And unfortunately...
But I wish Tim was here because I did say two things, and I think Tim disagreed. I said that there would be a problem with the online, which there is. It's a huge problem. And not just because of the lag, like just... the system in general, it's a complete mess.
It's broken.
You can't do one-on-one fights until you reach like a certain elite rank, and until then you just get thrown in whatever random bullshit. I mean, for someone like me, it doesn't matter, whatever, I'll play four player, who cares? But for people that are actually going to play that game online, I think they're looking for a very specific
thing. But Randy, everyone's asking me today on Workplace, like, what's happening with the tournament, and I'm like, well, I haven't announced the tournament yet because, like, right now it's kind of like a giant mess. Like, we all live in different cities. Like, you guys are in the States.
Different parts of the world.
Different parts of the world. Like, how am I going to organize a Goomba Stomp Super Smash Ultimate tournament when the complete online system's lag? So anyways, there's that issue. And the other thing I want to mention is that I did say that I do strongly believe that the additional characters, of which now we know Joker is one of the five, are all going to be third-party characters, like characters from... you know, maybe non-Nintendo, whatever. And I mean, just the fact that we got the Joker, like, I really do believe we will be getting someone from Microsoft, be it Banjo and Steve from Minecraft and or both. And I think it would be really, really funny if they actually get Crash. Because, I mean, Crash
Bandicoot. Crash is going to happen. You think so?
Maybe.
For sure. Crash Racing is coming to Nintendo Switch.
Yeah, I know.
It's coming.
Like, but that's really coming to the Switch?
Yeah.
Oh
my God, the game's so good.
What's hilarious about that? It's hilarious because Sony tried so hard to come up with their own version of Super Smash.
And it wasn't bad. It wasn't terrible.
It was a financial disaster for them.
Well, yeah, I mean, it played bad, but I didn't lose my job over it, so I don't care.
No. But it'll be funny, like, it's like, basically, if you want to come, like, it's like, in order for them to put him on a good fighting game, it's going to be on a Nintendo console. I just think that's, like, ironic.
I mean, screw it. Put Aloy in there. I'm down for it. Put Kratos in Smash Brothers. Yeah.
Well, I think we'll get Crash. I think we might get Banjo. I think we'll get another Nintendo pick. I don't think they'll all be third party. I think we get somebody like, so I made this list like a year and a half ago about characters thought we would get in there. And four out of five have come true. The only one that's left is Professor Layton. And I think he will eventually come to Smash. He's just one of those oddball picks. Be perfect for DLC, and he's a Nintendo character. Well, he's level 5 technically, so he's technically a third party, but they work so close to Nintendo.
So they're never doing Waluigi?
No, he's never coming. No, Sakurai will not let him.
Ever coming. Like, the Waluigi's all over the game. He's everywhere. There's spirits, there's trophies from before. That is why I love Super Smash, the series, because I feel like there's so much imagination, not just so much hard work, not just so much passion, not just so much, you know, whatever. Like, it's just so much imagination goes into making these games. And that's why, like, has a fighting game, like, it is completely bonkers. When you have, like, 8 fighters battling now in on a stage that's, like, morphing into a different stage, like, with 100 items falling down and, like, fake
all with completely unique movesets. The movesets in this game are just insane for the different characters.
Yeah, it's quite a big difference, right? I'm glad they put the Echo characters in to, so they can add some fun characters without people getting mad about them taking a slot. That's worked out really good. So you have characters like Crom, although I don't think we needed another Fire Emblem representative. You got some characters like Ken and stuff in with those Echo characters. Really like that. And the moveset differentiation, like you said, is just insane. There's like 8 different small meters for certain characters. Like Inkling has the Ink meter. You know, Cloud has the Limit Break meter. I mean, Robin has his Magic meter. All sorts of different stuff they work in.
Yeah, but there's so many callbacks. Like even with Snake, like there is this the callback to Smash when you get the cutscenes from. Sorry, not Smash. I mean Brawl. Remember you get those like cutscenes?
Yeah, the talks with his his superiors or whatever.
Yeah,
the walkie-talkie scenes. Also, yeah, green screen.
If you're playing with Fox on a Star Fox level, you can actually call the whole entire like Star Fox crew, and like they'll pop up in a little bubble speeches. Well, actually, you hear their voices too. Like the entire voice cast is there, so they'll start talking to Fox. Like there's all these amazing Easter eggs. So Katrina, our editor over, or is she still an editor, or is she like
she's still kind of one of the indie games editors. Yeah,
she's kind of running the website right now. Anyways, so Katrina is like new to the Smash series, and she's been playing it with her boyfriend. Now she wants to actually buy the game because I think he's hogging up the game. So like she's asking like. So she's new to Smash. So she's like, should I buy the game? I'm like, hell yeah. But she wants to know, like, for newcomers, like, it is overwhelming. Like, what can we recommend? Do we even recommend this game for someone who is new to the Smash series? The one thing I would recommend is as soon as you start playing, go straight into the control settings and adjust the controls to your liking, because I completely changed everything. I reversed my shield and block.
Oh, the original controls were awful with like the...
You guys think so?
I did, yes. Well, I had to change
it. Oh my goodness.
I played 20 hours with the default controls.
No.
Yeah, I mean, I play default. I don't play with Pro Controller, but I play with default GameCube. But when I do play Pro Controller, I just play with the defaults. I mean, I turn off tap jump and I turn off A to B to smash, but besides that...
The tap jump, you've got to turn off. That's just that's a mistake to even have that.
I mean, a lot of pros use that all the time, right?
Really?
But like for me, yeah, I hate it, but a lot of professional players will use it a lot, depending on their play style. A lot of them grew up playing like Melee, and tap jump is on in Melee no matter what. So,
me. That's probably why.
I keep it on. I kind of like, anyways, I swapped it. I think I mapped my jump to A and like...
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Oh, confused. Like, I'm so confused.
I know. My nephew's like, how did you set up your controllers? I'm like, well, my tap jump is A, and then my just normal attack, I think, is B.
Switched
the shield. And
oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So, Randy, you switched it to tilt on joystick, right? Is that smash attack or?
Nope.
Okay.
I have not. Is that the one thing I should do?
No, I hate that, but a lot of people recommend it. I don't, because Ganondorf's up tilt is terrible, and he pauses and like sticks his leg up for like 3 minutes and slams it down. So I don't recommend doing that for my character, but I was just wondering. I've seen a lot of people recommend setting your stick to tilt, but I don't like it.
You're talking about for Final Smash?
No, your tilts, like setting your control, your C-stick to your tilts, which is when you just, instead of smashing, just hold the stick and then hit A, right?
Yeah, I actually do that. But I do, the thing is, I should actually say that these are the controls I set for my Pro Controller, not my GameCube controller.
Oh, yeah, but...
I'm going to ask. So with the GameCube, so basically I've been using a GameCube, don't ask me why, just whatever, just been doing it. I've been using my GameCube controller for World of Light, and I kept the default controls. But when I'm playing with my friends or my nephews, I use the Pro Controller and I completely swap the whole entire like controls game.
Brain hurts.
Like, completely.
That's understandable. It flows a little better. Now I see what you're talking about when you're redesigning your control scheme. It makes a little bit more sense to have B as the main attack. Yeah.
Yeah. So the thing is I feel like if I ever really want to go somewhere where it's like a bit competitive, like be it like we have say our Goomba Stomp tournament, I'll most likely just end up like using my Pro Controller, at least for now, until I get maybe used to the GameCube controller. But like the thing is, I'm not being challenged on World of Light. Like it's not at all a challenge.
Bump it up to hard. It is insane when you bump it up to hard. Yes, I put on hard earlier today, and the boss just absolutely. I had an advantage on spirit level over him, and he still just destroyed me. One of the bosses in World of Light. So I was like, wow, I put it back down on normal. Hard is in a really hard challenge. So if it's too easy for you, bump it up to that. It'll make it a lot more interesting.
Okay, well, regardless, for anyone buying the game, if you're new to Super Smash, I recommend adjusting the controls to the way you like and the way you think it plays good for you.
Definitely.
Any advice?
Definitely. This one is hard for me to recommend to brand new Smash people because it has so much, in my opinion, less single player content that I would recommend compared to previous Smash games. So like, nobody has a Wii U. That's the problem. Or else I would recommend Smash 4 on Wii U or 3DS as like a really good entry Smash game. I think that's the best one they have in terms of getting people into Smash. I think it's open. There's so much single player content you have. You have your classic modes and an actual all-star mode, which this game lacks. You has just home run contests and all that stuff that gets you really into the game. There's more characters unlocked from the beginning. I think it's just overall more casual friendly. And the game is like super cheap on Wii U. I think I saw it was like $12-15 recently. But of course you got DLC you have to pay for like, if you did that. I have trouble recommending Ultimate to brand new people. Like for Patrick, I can understand because it's just so overwhelming, so much stuff, right?
There's no question it's a lot of stuff. I mean, I still will go back to, I wasn't necessarily overwhelmed by the content, but I just didn't care for the feel. That's why I would recommend people play it first to see if you're even going to get into this. Because if you don't like the way it feels like I didn't, then you're not going to want to even bother exploring the content anymore.
Yeah, it's like me with a Street Fighter game. Like, it's just the same thing Patrick has with Smash. It's like, hey, I don't like the way Street Fighter plays. I don't like having to hit a head up to jump. I don't like holding back to block. I don't like stuff like that. I don't like all the complicated button inputs to do an attack. So, like, for me, no matter how good a Street Fighter game is or anything based off that style of fighting game, I'm probably not going to buy it. I might play it when I'm over at somebody else's house or something, but I'm just not going to buy it because it just doesn't appeal to me in terms of controls. I imagine it's the opposite thing for you, right, Patrick? I mean, you like the way traditional fighting games control, yep. But you hate Smash, right?
Exactly.
The controls just, yeah, like, I understand that. Everybody I've ever played the game with hates the way it controls.
Well, the only thing is, as much as I do love my Wii U version, you can't take the Wii U version on the go. I can't take it to work and play it.
I know. Yeah, that's the big advantage. That's what I have written down right here. I say the $60 is worth the price. The price of admission is worth it just to be able to take it anywhere you go because it's flawless. The 720p stuff on it, right? It's beautiful.
And have you played handheld mode?
Yes, I played in handheld mode probably 65% of the time I've had it. It's great. Okay.
Yeah, I played it in the car and loved it. I was surprised how much I enjoyed it on there.
And I shared a Joy-Con with somebody else and played it, and that's actually a really comfortable way to play. I was surprised. It played really
well.
Yeah,
it works surprisingly well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a good advertisement for right there. I wish I liked it. I mean, it's one of those things, you know, Rick, when you were talking about all the callbacks and stuff like that. Like, that to me, that I love that stuff, and I love how Nintendo does that stuff, and I really want to like this game. Not for me, but it sounds like it is something you guys would at least recommend people check out for this holiday season, right?
Yeah, like I said earlier, if I had reviewed the game, I would have been a little critical and given it like slapped it an 8 out of 10. That's just because of the problems I addressed earlier. But it is maybe like my favorite game of 2018. Like, we've talked about this plenty of times. Like, there's a difference between, you know, favorite and best. Is it the best game? I think God of War is the best game, but it's my favorite game. That and NBA 2K18. And you know, we're gonna submit our list this week, and those are the two at the top of my list along with God of War.
Well, there you go. I think that we can wrap it up with that then. For some more 2018 holiday gifts, though, we're going to do a really quick segment when we come back and tell you some good gifts for gamers. Okay, guys, we're back. We're going to just make this a really quick segment.
It's Christmas now.
It is Christmas now, yes. We went a little long with the Smash thing, so we're going to make this really quick. But we did have – we have an article up on Goombastomp.com that's got – it's a holiday gift guide for gamers in 2018. I highly recommend you go check it out. There's a bunch of cool stuff on there that any gamer would love. And it's got varying price points for all of these things as well. Really quickly, we're just going to go around the room and – what would you guys recommend? Well, what's your suggestion? Isaac, we'll start with you.
So I found this neat little book released called GameCube Anthology Classic Edition. And it's like this big collectible like encyclopedia of the GameCube. Like I said, as I mentioned earlier, I'm a big fan of the system. And it like covers its entire history. And it gives it the entire library and a rating for every game that was ever released for the GameCube. And I saw it online. Like I don't personally own it, but it just looks absolutely amazing. Just the attention to detail and everything. Wrote more about it in the article, but this is the way I ended it. It's like, I love it. I think it's a good buy for $40. It might be a little bit pricey, but it makes a good coffee book, a good coffee table piece. And I'm still waiting for Santa to bring me mine.
I was going to say, you're asking somebody to get you this, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I mean, it's still out there, right? I really like the way it looks. I haven't dropped anything on it yet, but I would recommend it just based on what I see from it. It looks great. And as a big fan of the GameCube, I'm certainly looking to get my hands on one very soon. So
you really are a big fan of the GameCube.
I am.
All right. Randy, what about you? What do you got?
So I picked up this book for somebody I bought a gift for. It's called, it's written by Evan Amos. It's called The Game Console. It's a photographic history from Atari to Xbox. And it's basically like this really dope, in-depth encyclopedia of every major and minor home video console and handheld system that's come out from, I mean, they start at the beginning with the Atari systems and, you know, stuff like the Fairchild Channel F, which from the 70s and all that. And they go all the way up to the PS4 and the Xbox One. You know, it has the basic information, you know, what it costs, the internals. But what it has is these really cool breakdowns where they'll actually take apart the controllers and take apart the systems and give you these beautiful photographs of the chipsets and, like, how the controllers were all composed and stuff. It's just a great book for anybody who's just, like, into the aesthetics of video games, or just somebody who might be on the technical end who likes to understand how they work. Like seeing a DualShock broken apart into its 200 different pieces, the modern DualShock, the DualShock 4, it's a really impressive thing to see on a page.
Well, it shows you a little bit how these magic boxes work, I suppose. I myself have never opened up a single console that I've ever had to peek inside, but
you need to break some stuff.
I prefer to keep this like movies. It's magic to me. I don't want to know that. I know too much about how movies work, and it spoils it sometimes for me.
Yeah.
Rick, what about you?
Well, I can recommend a lot of things. I would just redirect our listeners to Goombastomp.com. Check out the article of my recommendations. To, I guess, tie in with the theme of today's show, and I guess because everyone's choosing a book, I'm just going to recommend the Super Smash Bros. Ultimate Official Guide, because, as we said, this game is incredibly overwhelming, not just for newcomers, but even for people who've been playing Smash since the very first game was released. There's just so much to know and learn, and, you know, I've been playing Smash for maybe, like, 4 hours at an average, like over the weekend, like I think 8 hours on Saturday and 6 hours on Sunday. I put a lot of time into the game, and I think I've maybe seen 5% of the game because there's like I said, so much to see and do. So this book is 464 pages. It's the
It's the book that made Prima go bankrupt.
Has advertised.
They had to print the whole damn thing.
Yeah, everything you need to know to come out on top is right here in 464 pages.
Smash Brothers, patch it out. Too overwhelming for you? Read this book.
Yeah, until they patch everything out and completely change everything.
Yes. You know, you guys laugh, but they don't make game manuals anymore. It's like rare. Like I can't remember the last game that came with a manual, but like nowadays, like this would be like the video game manual.
Pretty much.
Yeah. I think it's funny that all four of us, we had nothing to do. We did not tell each other what our picks were going to be beforehand, and we're all just doing books. Do people still read? I'm not sure that's something that happens.
Mine's more pictures and words, in my defense.
See, now I'm going with all words and no pictures. So I'm going to do a little website promotion here. because I wrote Marty Allen's book. We had Marty on the show, and I think that he sent me a copy of it, and I think it's actually a really cool gift, especially for that person. If you know an ex gamer, somebody who probably is as old as Randy, me, and Rick, who maybe has gotten out of gaming, but this would be something. It's called Retro Games, and it's a book basically from the NES era through the N64 era of some of the most, about 100 and some odd of the most influential games that came out over the course of that time period. So this is probably right in their wheelhouse, and it's kind of just a nice little good reminder. So it's total nostalgia, and nostalgia is big in games right now. It's short, sweet, perfect little stocking stuffer. Won't set you back much, but who knows? It might reignite interest in video games for that person who's lapsed out. So that's what
which brings me to my final story before we wrap up, because we are running long. Marty, if you're listening to the show, which I know you are, I still have not yet received my book, the copy of the book that you wrote and sent me, because you're so kind, because the post office is on strike here in Montreal. So yeah, I can't get any of my Christmas gifts, and the reason why I mentioned this is because I actually pre-ordered Super Smash, and I did not get Super Smash because the post office is on strike, and I'm probably not going to get the game for like 2 weeks. So I had to actually go out and buy the game. So technically I own two copies of Super Smash right now. One is sitting somewhere in a post office, and one is sitting in my Nintendo Switch.
Oh my goodness.
You say things are bad in America.
At least I get my mail. The funny thing is the post office went on strike, the SAQ, which is, it's where we sell alcohol here. It's like, I don't know if you guys know. It's like in Montreal, there's a specific, like, it's
run. They're unionized?
Yeah, it's to sell alcohol, really? And they went on strike. And
just asking, you know, for trouble.
You also know it's like legal to smoke like pot here in Canada.
They ran just out of happened, pot. Right?
Here in Maine, too. Yeah.
So there was like, not that I smoke pot, but I'm just saying there was no pot, there was no alcohol, and there's no post office.
No alcohol? How is your country not set on fire by now? And on that note, I think we've come to the end of this podcast. But
burn it down!
Yeah, exactly. You Canadians, go do something about what's happening in your right now. You need alcohol, fast. I want to thank our two guests for coming. Randy, where can we find you online?
I am on Twitter at RJDank, as always. And you can find me right now at Goombastomp, writing about TV and stuff.
Yeah, the best of list is going to come out pretty soon, I believe. Is that not correct?
Oh yeah, we're putting our little tweaks and touches on there right now. That's going to be ready to go soon.
Perfect. Isaac, what about you? Where can we find you online?
You find me at Goombastomp, writing about the latest stuff about Nintendo. So.
Yes, you can. And Ricky D, what about you?
Goombastomp.com. You can find me on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and check out our website, because I know it's not Nintendo, but we just published a list of the 100 greatest PlayStation games of all time.
Yeah, that was a monster series of articles. My goodness. And of course, me, Patrick Murphy, can find me on Twitter at Sorted Cinema. Be sure to check out our film section as well. I do a column there now, a weekly column right now, on the best movie entrances of all time, or at least some of the most interesting ones. So check that out, and we'll see you back next week without Tim Mason, so you're going to be stuck with me again. But good luck playing Smash Brothers.
Colors weave into a spire of flame. Distant sparks call to a past still unnamed. Bear this torch against the cold of the night. Search your soul and reawaken the undying light. On that day when the sky fell away, our world came to an end. Fading sunrise. your soul.